May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our Rock and our Redeemer. Amen. I don't know whether you've had dreams that you remembered long after, or whether you have some dreams that you experience again and again. In the one recurring dream I have had since I was about 5 years old, I tried to run away from some soldiers that aimed their guns at me, but I have lead feet and can hardly run. Somehow I make it to the front door of the house I grew up in. I press the doorbell and know that I will be safe once I am inside the house. But nobody opens the door. The soldiers come and shoot at me and I collapse to the ground. That's when I usually wake up. I know that this dream was influenced by the military maneuvers that regularly occurred in our village, the mock battles that NATO troops occasionally had on the fields not far from our home. Maybe that dream is just a reflection of my childhood fears. Of course, at one stage, the interpretation of dreams was very important among elite circles in the Western world, with psychoanalysis often focusing on dreams. Just take Sigmund Freud or Carl Jung as examples. For them, dreams were essential in resolving personality problems. Since that time, psychiatrists give less and less value to dreams for understanding our personality. And yet nowadays, in part, they are again seen as a valid expression of our deepest fears and hopes. In the ancient world, dreams not only presented a way into solving our own personal problems, but rather complex social issues as well. Particularly those people in leadership paid attention to dreams so that they could responsibly lead people through the imminent dangers that dreams often portended. In the case of the Pharaoh, he knew that this was no ordinary dream, in our reading from Genesis, but rather that he had come upon critical information that would determine the future of his land. And so the Pharaoh gets the best consultants he can get his hands on. He wants an independent report and doesn't just trust the official advice. And in the end, the problem is solved to everyone's satisfaction and life can go on. I think that often we want to be like the Pharaoh when we are confronted with a problem. When, as a world or a nation, we are facing the nightmare of a pandemic, we want a clear answer on what is going to happen, how we can address the coming crisis. We want experts to tell us how we can all remain healthy with no adverse economic effects. And we want a vaccine now, one that allows us to continue living as we did before. When we see problems in the church, we want someone to tell us exactly what the underlying issues are and how those issues can be managed and resolved. We want to plan a nice 4-step program that we can be confident will result in a thriving church in which we still sing our favorite hymns and where we can still sit in our favorite pew. When our own future seems uncertain, when we face the unknown, when our life seems more nightmare than a dream, then we want a clear analysis of the problem. We want a clear plan, a book maybe, that leads to self-improvement so that we will lead a healthy, carefree, and enjoyable life. We may even be prepared to change our diet a bit or to adopt a spiritual discipline that is not too demanding. We value the input of a professional as long as we remain in control. It seems that our own actions often reflect those of the Pharaoh, and we may conclude that there is something in the old stories after all. But then we need to remember that this story is not really about the Pharaoh. No, it is about Joseph and the people of Israel. And then this story takes on a different meaning. Yes, in this case, Joseph was able to interpret the dreams, but that is not the point of this part of Genesis. Rather, it is the outworking of God's purposes, even through suffering, sin, mistakes, oppressive and arrogant government power, and family strife. After all, Joseph saw all his dreams destroyed again and again. And when he thought he was on the way to a comfortable life after he was betrayed by his brothers, he was thrown into the dungeon. Joseph went from hope to utter brokenness again and again. Of course, in the end, it all seemed to work out for him, but it was not an easy path getting there. In the end, Joseph could say to his brothers, "You intended harm, but God intended good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." The question, therefore, is whether we trust God also in the ups and downs of our lives, in the dying and new life of the church, and in the changes and constants of history, or do we want dependable plans that promise to get us through the most immediate problems? In our gospel reading today, the disciples are buffeted by the waves and the wind is against them. They encounter problems they cannot solve, and then they see a frightening figure coming towards them. In their turmoil, they cry out in fear. But Jesus says, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Through this, Jesus declares that he is the embodiment of the one who in the scriptures has been called I Am, the one who tramples the waves of the sea. In Jesus, God comes to the disciples in the tumult of the world and tells them, "Don't be afraid." It seems that Peter wants proof that this is Jesus and says, "Lord, if it is you, tell me to come to you on the water." And Jesus says, "Come." I'm not sure whether in the Gospels this request by Peter is seen as positive or negative. Is it putting God to the test or showing trust in Jesus? Anyway, Peter steps out into the storm and then takes his eyes off Jesus, concentrating on the wind and the waves. That's when he begins to sink. It is at this point that Peter recognizes that he needs Jesus' saving action. Jesus does save Peter, but he also scolds him. In the end, Jesus gets into the boat and calms the wind and the waves, and the disciples then recognize that Jesus is the Son of God. It is certainly the intention of Matthew in telling us this to reveal something of the power of Jesus, something of the extraordinary that his disciples encountered. But the story also calls us, as those who with the disciples look to Jesus, to also trust Jesus in the ups and downs of our own lives and to keep focused on him. That trust in Jesus through problems, through the changes, sometimes without a clear plan, may be difficult. But often that is how God works. The notion is well expressed in the 18th century hymn, "Be Still My Soul." "Be still my soul, your God will undertake to guide the future as he has the past. Your hope, your confidence, let nothing shake. All now mysterious shall be bright at last. Be still my soul, the waves and winds still know his voice who ruled them while he dwelt below." In the original German, instead of the word soul, this hymn uses the word will. So it is, "Be still my will." Both words refer to the core of our being, the focus of our care and worry. One of them refers more to the mental part of that, the other to the emotional, but they both together point to the core of our being when we have to be still at times. It seems that Joseph and the disciples, as well as the writers of Genesis and the Gospels, counted on God's guidance even in a confusing world full of problems. God will bring about his purposes, rather than through simple formulae and administrative expertise. God leads through the unknown so that those who trust in God will not be disappointed. That does not mean that detailed analysis and good management are not part of God's guidance. They sometimes are. And we know only too well that the church and we individually have gone wrong when we clearly disregarded common prudence. But that cannot be all. It's not what we put our trust in. Rather than the problems that seem to crowd in, our eyes need to be fixed on Jesus. Amen.